As we go on through this sermon and next week, we're still going to be talking about Luke 15, 11 through 32 is going to be our text. And I really want to talk about and to dig into the truths that are found in this parable. This parable that we call the prodigal son. One of the things that as we go through life, our goal is to be in God's family, is to be in with God. And we've talked about the conflict and as the illustration there, we've got, you know, with the church and with groups, there seems to be this exclusionary idea, or at least this exclusionary attitude where there's those who are in and then there's those who are out. And those who are out are always trying to figure out how to get in. And those who are in, a lot of times, they're not worried about those who are out because they're in and that's all that matters. And so often that is that's the attitude that we have in the kingdom. And it is it's one that is to the detriment of the kingdom. Well, this morning I thought, you know, last week I made an assumption, and I don't think that's a very smart thing to do. I made an assumption that everyone has heard this parable, and so I just kind of talked about it in generalities. But this morning I want to read through it. So if you would indulge me, and I appreciate the fact that we have a little extra time this morning. But in Luke chapter 15, starting in verse 1, we see, "Now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear him, but the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, 'This man welcomes sinners and eats with them.'" Now, one of the things I want you to see is when he talks about the tax collectors and sinners, what were they doing? They had all gathered around to hear him. Jesus was a man all about bringing good news to the poor, good news to those who were on the outs, good news to those who were desperate and thirsty for some good news. And the tax collectors and the sinners, they were listening. And then the Bible makes a very distinct transition. But the Pharisees and teachers of the law were muttering. So you got one group of people who were listening and gathering to hear, and a group of people that weren't gathering to hear. They had a whole nother agenda at heart. And so Jesus tells this series of parables. Last week, the scripture reading was the parable of the lost sheep. This week, the scripture reading was the parable of the lost coin. And so I'm going to read starting in verse 11. You know why they're gathered around. You know who's gathered and who he's talking to. And then Jesus continued, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, 'Father, give me my share of the estate.' So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all that he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and he hired himself out to a citizen of that country who sent him out into the field to feed the pigs. And he longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, 'How many of my father's hired men have food to spare? And here I am starving to death. I will set out and go back. I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired men.' So he got up and he went to his father. Well, while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. And he ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son said to him, 'Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fatted calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' So they began to celebrate. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. 'Your brother has come,' he replied, 'and your father has killed the fatted calf because he has him back safe and sound.' The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. So when this son of yours who has squandered your property with prostitutes comes home, you kill the fatted calf for him. My son, the father said, you're always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad, because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. The question I want to ask this morning, as we let that parable just kind of soak and marinate a little bit, and just sort of, you know, kind of creep into the crevices of our mind and all of the different dynamics that are there and all of the different definitions that we see there. I mean, he said to, you've got all of this imagery running around in this story, the son who comes to his father and says, give me my inheritance now. And in those days, it wasn't just like you could say, well, I've got all this money in the bank and all right, I'm going to go and get your portion and deduct it and give it to you. I mean, in those days, wealth was accumulated in land primarily. And so one of the things, land and livestock and all. So it was going to be a big issue for this guy to liquidate all that he had in order to give the son his request and to give him what he was asking for. And the father does that. I mean, it was a big deal. It was more than just writing a check and saying, here, my estate is worth X. Here's your portion. You disappoint me, son. No, it was more than that. It was a process. He had to, gather up all of the herds and sell all the land and all of this other, figure out what he was worth and then go to the market and get all of these transactions done and so that he could give him. He had to go through a lot for this to happen. And then you've got him, going into this, the son gathering up his possessions, going and squandering it. We'll get to what that means in a little bit later. But the punchline of it is that he comes to an end of his money and now he's in need and he's feeding these pigs. And he says, hired men. See, and those, hired men have it better in my father's house. In those days, there was a couple of different kind of people that worked for you. You had the hired servants, and then you had the bond servants and the slaves. And the hired men, they were people that lived off the estate and would come into the farm or the fields and work, and then they would do their job and then they would go home. They weren't really even connected with the state at all. And then there were slaves who were brought in, and everything that they needed was provided for them. And so you've got, even the slaves are a little bit closer to the landowner than the hired men. The hired men, they were just there to get a job. They weren't even connected at all. And he said, I'm not, they were the furthest away from the landowner. He said, the hired men have it better than this. He comes back, and then the brother says he won't even go into the party. He won't even go in to celebrate. And you hear that distinction. He says, this son of yours, he won't even own this guy. He won't even claim his relationship to him. He says, this son of yours, just removing himself, divorcing himself from the family. He's saying, this son of yours. And then the father reminds him, no, this brother of yours. See, at the end, the father says, look, you know what? I'm still the father around here, and let me explain something to you. He is still your brother. Can't make him celebrate, but he can remind him that there is, in fact, a relationship there. So you see, there's a whole lot of dynamics going on. There's a lot of pictures to be painted, but the reality, the question I want to ask is why so wasteful a family? Why so wasteful? I mean, that's what the word prodigal means. That's what in the context of this parable and in biblical language, the prodigal means wasteful. That's when we call the parable the wasteful son. I mean, isn't that in fact what he does? I mean, he goes and he wastes all that he has. The Bible tells us that he goes to this far land and on, you know, wild living or loose living or extravagant living. That's what he does. So throughout this, I want to ask the question, what was wasted? You know, because each one of the characters in this plot, in this parable, you know, whether it was the younger son, the older son, or the father, wasted something. What was it? Why was it wasted? Why was it just, you know, whatever it is that was at their disposal, why was it, why was it that they just threw these things around as if they didn't matter? And then who defines waste? Who defines what is a good use of this material or a bad use of this? Who defines what is defined as waste and wasteful? So we're going to look first at the younger brother. Oh, let's go back. Go back when I kind of jumped the gun. The younger brother wasted money. I think that we can all agree when he goes to his father, and you know, no matter what the attitude was, no matter why he would go to his father and say, "Give me my portion of the estate now," you know, there's a whole attitude that's just humiliating for the father, that's disgraceful for him. But you know, notwithstanding the attitude, I think we can all agree that what he does with what he is given is a colossal waste of resources. A colossal waste of money. I mean, at the end of the day, at the end of this, he takes a third of his father's land, all that he had. And he's got nothing to show for it. He's got absolutely nothing left over. Nothing to give to anyone else, nothing to support himself, nothing at all. And he's a liability to those he is around. I think we could agree that he wasted money. But is it really a waste? I mean, the father was willing to give it. The father was willing to do whatever he had to do in order to provide his son with what his son requested. And really what he was after was this extravagant living. Because once he got out from under the father's jurisdiction, the Bible talks about he squandered it in wild living. The word there is a Greek word that really means, in this case, it really means extravagant. It's interesting to see that the son assumes that he's wasted it on prostitutes. We never get that from the text. We never get any of the accusations that the older brother gives to the younger brother. We never get that from the text. The word there that's translated as riotous living in the King James or wild living or you know, free living, it's just extravagant. I mean, that doesn't necessarily have to be inherently sinful. It's just extravagant. It's just beyond what the father and the older brother thought were appropriate. But at the end of the day, he's got nothing to show for it. I think that's really the takeaway, is that at the end of the day, he's got nothing to show for it. But I don't know that it was necessarily investments. I don't know that it was necessarily property that the son was after. Because we have a couple of different ways of seeking or finding happiness displayed here. The first one is self-discovery. Is figuring out, it being on my own. And isn't that what really leads to the moral decline in society? And the younger brother really, he kind of represents that moral decline. And it's all that, you know, self-discovery. I'm in charge. I'm in control. I'm not going to be under the thumb of this ruler or this parent or this government or whatever. And all of the movements that are, you know, the loose moral movements out there, that it's all about being in control, self-discovery. I'll really be happy if I can be in control, if I can be the one that's calling the shots. And so he takes all of this money, all of this resources, and he just, by our definition, and probably by his, he squanders it. But I don't think the father looked at it as that. Because in the end, did he find happiness? Did he find fulfillment? No, he didn't. Did he find what he was looking for? Not at all. You see, I think the father knew what the son would find when he got there. And I think the father, I mean, as long as we're just reading into this, right? As long as we're just trying to learn something for ourselves to figure out how in the world we can relate better to God through this story, I think it's okay for us to read into this and say, okay, maybe the father knew the son was going to find emptiness at the end of this self-discovery road, and he was willing to let him go there, hoping that he would come back when it was all said and done. So, was the money wasted? Maybe not. You know, I hate to do this. I hate my heart's breaking, not really, but I'm going to tell a story on my favorite 16-year-old son who I love and in whom I'm well pleased. Give me a hug a little bit. Love you. Good boy. I have this truck sitting in my garage. Hey, he's like, oh, somebody kill me. And this truck cost about $2,000. And Hayden was driving this truck. Carefully. He was driving this truck carefully. And Bob was there. Bob had to come and help me pull this truck out of a ditch. And I told Bob this, you know, that's that night after Bob calmed me down and put some perspective on some things and helped really shepherd me through a very dark moment in my life. And I came to the realization that Hayden learned a very, very valuable lesson. I don't know if he is, you know, he's a 16-year-old driver and he was wet and he, you know, overcorrected and got sideways and went down and blah, 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 blah. He learned a very valuable lesson. It might not make him a better driver. I think it has, but he learned that a vehicle can get away from you that fast. I mean, it really can. And it's not always your fault when it gets away from you. And if you've got passengers in the car, you better make sure that they've got their seatbelt on because there's so many forces outside of your control. And when you're 16, I mean, raise your hand if when you got your driver's license, you had a grasp on the fact that, you know, this is dangerous and I need to be really super careful at every moment because it could really get away from me. Anyone? Okay, we got one. Liar. You don't know that now. But you know, we've all got to learn that lesson. And I told Bob, I said, you know what? If Hayden's learned that and all it cost me was an old pickup truck, I think we got off cheap. I think we got off real cheap. Well, see, as the son comes back to the father, maybe that dad was thinking, it worked. It worked. And if all it cost me was a third of everything I had, then I got off cheap because there's some sons that have never come back, and mine did. And then there's one that never left, but he was never really there. Because see, the older brother, he wasted opportunity. He had this opportunity to be with the father and to talk to the father and to work alongside his dad and to really make his dad happy. But he had this he had something that he didn't really realize, that all that the father had was available to him. And more than that, he said all that. I mean, what did his dad say to him at the end? He said in verse 30. No, verse 31, my son, the father said, you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. Everything I have is yours. Do you think that might have been a revelation to the older son? Do you mean if this vase right here, if I just wanted to break it, it's yours? You mean if I wanted to go and kill this young goat and have a party, it's yours. You mean if I all of these things start flooding, all that I have is yours. All of the honor, all of the glory, all of the lands, all of the blessings, all of the provisions, all of the joy of being secure, everything I have is yours. older son never knew that. He never understood that. He's looking for happiness also. But it's not through self-discovery. It's through this moral conformity. And we know people like that, that they're thinking that I'm just going to do these things and I'm going to, keep these rules and fit into society and do everything that I'm supposed to do, because ultimately it's going to be to my betterment. If I work hard and do this, then I'm going to save all this money and I'm going to have this retirement and then I'm going to, do these things. And all of this moral and social conformity, it's not really for anything of true value. It's just this perceived happiness that if I follow all the rules, if I do everything I'm supposed to do, if I then somehow, and people like this, somehow life and society is, they're going to owe me in the end. In the end, it wasn't what the older brother had planned at all. Because in the end, we find that the father wasted both plus grace. You see, to our definition, if we're defining it, and so often we do, don't we? We really make the rules and define what grace should and should not be spent on. We have money and opportunity. By our definition, the father wasted both, didn't he? By our definition, the father wasted money by giving it to the younger son just to go out and blow it. Do you know what else could be done with that money? Does that not sound like a question that Jesus was asked when the woman came and broke this expensive jar of perfume and just anointed him in preparation for his burial? And those who were around said, but that could be sold and the money given to the poor. And Jesus said, well, you're going to have poor forever. I'm only going to be here for a short time. But that's a big waste. No, it's not. It was spent to bless Jesus. And that guy went off and he spent all of that money. But I guarantee you think he'll ever leave the Father again? Maybe that was the best investment of that money he could have made. Maybe if he learned that life can get away from you that fast, he got off cheap. An opportunity. Father wasted opportunity because he's got that son there. And the older son. And shouldn't he have been spending some quality time? Shouldn't he have been spending time with the son, explaining to him all of this is yours and having the opportunity to bring his son in closer? But he just wasted all that, right? Or maybe he knew that there's no way to force father-son relationship intimacy with someone who doesn't want that to begin with. Because all that the older son wanted was the same thing the younger son got. But he was just willing to go about it a completely different way. He was kind of like the old, we're going to smoke him out. The younger son had this full frontal attack. I want what's mine now. And the older son said, well, I just wait. If I just wait, oh, I'm going to get what I want. And it might be even more, because by the time that that dad dies, then his estate will be worth more and I'll have more. He's going to get what he wants, because that's all that he wanted anyway. And his attitude at the end explains that. See, the father wasted both plus grace. And that's the real problem, isn't it? That's the real down deep, the moral problem that we have, because that's why the older brother's mad. And isn't that so often those of us who kind of struggle with the concept of God's grace, not only for ourselves, but more so for others? Aren't we really struggling with God? Why are you just so cavalier and flagrant with the grace that you have? Why are you so willing to waste it on the obvious undeserving? Oh, my brother from another mother. Thank you so much. Ice in there. I mean, isn't that our problem, that we're so fed up with God and all of this free grace that He just gives, and we're so willing, like the older brother, to pass judgment on God for who He would bring in and how He would treat them afterwards. Because at the end, we believe God's wasting His grace. The money ran out because of financial separation. Because the younger brother took what he wanted and he separated himself from the Father. He separated himself from the source of what he got in the first place. And in the case of the older brother, the joy was not experienced because of emotional separation. You see, both of these are heart conditions that only God can somehow cure. But you see, the younger son went about experiencing life through financial freedom and financial independence. And separate from the Father, that lifestyle runs out and is empty. And the older son, he wanted to experience the joy of the estate. You know, he didn't really care anything about the Father, but he wanted the joy of the estate, but he was not emotionally attached to the one that built the estate, that accumulated, that provided that. And so the joy of being there was missed. And in the end, who had a greater alienation from the Father? Who had a greater separation from God? See, the moral, you know, those who, you know, that are good and know it, they run a greater risk of alienation than those who are seeking self-discovery. I mean, in the end, the younger brother is in the party. The younger brother is in the celebration. The younger brother is there experiencing the joy of the Lord. And the older brother has an angry alienation that the father can't even approach. So the question is, why are we being good? Why? The question of this parable is, why are we being good? Why are we practicing this... This moral conformity. Why are we doing it? Because in the end, we run a greater risk of being alienated from God than those who just do whatever it is they want to do. So why are we here? Are God and the good deeds that we find to do just pawns for us to use to get what we want? The question is if heaven is the goal because we think that we will be happy there. If going to heaven is our goal in life because we think that we will be happy, then the chances are that when we get there, we really won't be. And like Jesus said, many will hear, away from me, I never knew you. See, what Jesus teaches in this parable, and he goes on in Luke 18 to say, the humble are in and the proud are out. If it's a question of in and out, the humble are in and the proud, they're out. And the proud wouldn't even like it if they got in, because all them dirty, humble people are in there. Now, I don't really have a satisfactory conclusion for this sermon. And I've wrestled with that all week. I mean, I woke up this morning at like 4:00. How am I going to end this thing? Because I really don't know. I really don't know how to end a sermon where I said that, you know what? most of us, you know, we're trying to be good. And I think the greatest thing we can ask ourselves is why? We're being good because in the end, I will be rewarded for it. Or I'm trying to be good because in the end and in the beginning and right now, it brings glory to God. Let me take a drink and think about this for a second. I mean, I'm really struggling. I'm really wrestling with this. I mean, I've gone into Greek words and I've looked at stuff for weeks and been studying. And I think in the end, why we do what we do has to be for the glory of God. I think it's found in the younger brother's question is, look, Dad, give me what's mine now. And that brings all kinds of shame and reproach and disgrace and all of this to the father. That the father was willing to accept. Now the older brother, he never ever tried to talk him out. Never once. All he was worried about was the stuff. It was never the glory or the honor or the name of the family. The name of the father. So maybe that's the conclusion. Maybe we just have to ask ourselves, are we doing what we are doing? Are we still in the fields? Are we still working? Are we still with the Father for His glory or because we'll get something in the end? The problem is, if it's just to get something in the end, the Bible says we probably won't. And we probably won't want it. But if it's to the glory of the Father, then we'll dance on in there and have a good time with all those younger brothers. Because the Father's happy. And what makes Him happy is ultimately what makes us happy. Can we leave here today saying that? God, what makes you happy makes me happy. God, what makes you honored honors me. God, what makes you smile, what makes you dance, makes me smile, makes me dance. Because that's the only way. The only way, not only will we get in, but it's the only way that we'll want to get in. This morning, I guess that's as satisfactory a way as I can end that, but we're going to talk more about that next week. This is a deep, deep well here that Jesus teaches us. I'll give you this to chew on. Are we compared to the coins? Because one of those coins got lost. No fault to the coin. How are you going to blame an inanimate object for getting lost? Ever think of that? But it's what it says. But I think the key there is, what is the Father willing to do to find that coin? Kind of has a lot to do with one of my favorite lines in any movie, Unforgiven with Clint Eastwood. You know, when he shoots Little Bill at the end. He says, Little Bill's laying there. I don't deserve this. He says, deserves got nothing to do with it. Fault might got nothing to do with it. This morning, if you want to leave here changed, leave here a little different than you got here, you have that opportunity. If you want to waste God's money, it's fine. He's got plenty. If you're going to waste His resources, let's just get to the point. It doesn't matter. He's got plenty. If we're so caught up in what I do with the stuff that I've been given, it doesn't matter. He's got more. If we can get to the point where we realize that God is all we need, that God is all we want, that an intimate relationship with Him separate from the stuff is all we want, then everything wasted is well worth it. If we want to quit wasting opportunities to get close to God and take Him up on that offer, we have that. We have that opportunity. God is willing to take the worst of sinners and wash them and clean them and make them comfortable and bring them into the party. And He's also willing to take the worst of saints and invite them to. Whatever you need, let us know as together we stand and as we sing.